to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It's Saturday, end of the week, looking back. Sun not quite up there. If you're watching through our little studio webcam, it's still dark outside here on the island of Oahu. That, of course, will change itself during the course of today's program. And hello. I'm hearing a feed. Okay, I guess we had a technical glitch just then, and I was getting some kind of a feed coming through that should not be there. Anyway, to get back to the show here. Okay, yeah, we're sorting out our little mess. You know, it's that darned mutant hamster that's in there causing all these problems. So anyway, getting back to our story here, you know, I was watching over the TV the last couple of days on the radio, driving in the car and hearing all these commercials from all these different companies that people are doing business with about how to manage your bill and how to lower your costs and how to do this and how to do that. And I'm seeing in the advertisements for fashion and cosmetics, you know, that the austere look is in, and they're trying to make poverty chic. And I had a really negative reaction to this because throughout most of my life, we were being propagandized by the corporate media to dress up, to adorn ourselves, to spend more money on cosmetics and fashions and accessories and the required little gizmos to have on your belt in order to prove that you were of a superior human being. And of course, I resented that because I prefer to value human beings based on their character inside, which is not something that you can get from a bottle. Except for the mean drunks. They get their character from a bottle, but I digress. Here's the situation. We're being sold that it's okay to look like you don't have a lot of money left anymore. And, you know, the rich are being told to put away their Rolexes and wear a Casio and you know, to basically lower our image here to be more consistent with our standard of living. And you know what? The reason I have a problem with that is they're selling you on a lower standard of living, that for after all the years that you spent building your life up and you're watching everything dissolve in front of you, it's okay. It wasn't all that important to begin with. And maybe getting away from materialism is a very good thing for us spiritually, but at the same time, it's not going to solve the problem because no matter how much you lower your standard of living, no matter how much you surrender, no matter how much you give up, no matter how hard you work and how little you take, it's never going to be enough for this government and for the people who are truly wealthy masters of the universe, because they are infected with this sickness of greed. And it doesn't matter how much money they get. I mean, I don't know about you, but I sat down the other day and I said, seriously, because I'm getting on in years, you know, how much money could I be comfortable on for the rest of my life if I decided I wanted to stop working? How much money would I need? And it really wasn't that large of a sum of money. And then you turn around and you're hearing about all these bonuses that are going out to these Wall Street executives and just huge amounts of money. And these people, you know, they're, you know, Bernie Madoff and his wife were worth just shy of $1 billion. And still he felt he had to go out and cheat other people for more money. You know, it wouldn't take a lot of money for any one of us to be, you know, happy and comfortable and well off. But the people who've got the money are so desperate to get more, to prove that they're better than the rest of the rich people around them. You know, it's a game, and whoever's got the most number of zeros after their name is the winner. And somehow they think this will get them into heaven, if you believe in heaven. And the rest of us, we're being encouraged now by the corporate media to reduce our lifestyles, to reduce our payment, to maybe go from two phone lines to one line. I'm picking an example out of the thin air. They're selling us on this idea of reducing our standard of living. Why? So that there's more surplus to be siphoned off by the government and dropped on the rich. That is the message behind all of these commercials about how to reduce your costs and how to do this and how to do this. It is selling you on the idea that you must make do with less so that the rich can have more. Well, I have a comment about that, but if I actually say it on the air, the Federal Communications Commission will come in here and start yanking out our transmitter wires a handful at a time and just sit there with grabbing the cables in the transmitter and going, she loves me, she loves me not, she loves me, she loves me not, and just take us right off the air. So that's the comment on that. Now, this gets us to our first story in the news today. Apparently, there's a little bit of double dipping going on all this taxpayer bailouts, okay? We are finding that, they're finally starting to admit some of these AIG counterparties, the people who the money is flowing to because of these credit default swaps. Now, these are not the end recipients of the money. These are the companies that are the counterparties and who their depositors are or investors are that ultimately receive this largesse. That is still being hidden. The names that are being put out are the cutouts, the intermediaries, the facilitators. And these are companies like AIG International, which is a separate business entity from AIG, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, bunch of others like that. Here's the deal. These companies already got TARP money from the bailouts last year because they were saying, we are anticipating we are going to default on these credit swaps. So your government took $1 trillion of your money and gave it to these companies to make up for these assets that were going to default. Then they turn around and they give $170 billion to AIG to pay those credit default swaps. So these double dippers, Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, they already got the money from the taxpayer to cover these defaults. And then these credit default swaps are being paid off anyway by AIG, again using taxpayer money. Folks, you just got screwed twice from two different directions. And there is no indication they're going to stop. It's a wonderfully sweet deal. I mean, this reminds me, reading this article reminds me of the situation that we had back in the 1980s with the savings and loan disaster. And what was going on is these CIA groups who were involved in this Iran-Contra drug smuggling, they were fighting this covert war in Nicaragua that was not approved by Congress. And so to get the money to pay for the war, and incidentally make themselves all very rich in the process, they set up this cocaine pipeline that was bringing cocaine into MENA, Arkansas, while Bill Clinton was governor of the state, by the way. And then the drugs were being sold and the money was being laundered through savings and loan associations and sent back out as weapons and supplies to the Contras. And what would happen is one of these CIA front groups that was doing this operation, they would go and they would take this drug money and they'd mix it with profits from some real businesses like convenience stores and multi-screen movie theaters, places where it's really hard to say, is the cash coming out of it really consistent with the inventory going in? So they would take this money and they put it in these numbered brokered accounts in the savings and loans. And George Bush Sr. set the stage for this by raising the maximum insurable limit for savings and loan accounts from $10,000 to $100,000. And that's what set the stage. So they take this money, they break it into these deposits of $100,000 each or less, and they broker them into a targeted savings and loan. From the SNL's point of view, it's a couple of hundred different loans or a couple of thousand different loans, a couple of thousand different deposits, that have come in to the SNL through these various account brokerages. That sets the stage. Now, the same CIA front group forms a new business. They go to the savings and loan, and they borrow back the same money they just put in there. And they do it either with a compromised officer or executive at the savings and loan, or they get a land appraiser who's in on the scam, and they buy some worthless property, and the appraiser says, oh, it's easily worth the money they're trying to borrow, millions and millions and millions of dollars. And so the savings and loan gives the money to this phony company on the basis of this worthless piece of land collateral. They skedaddle with the money, which, because it's the proceeds of a loan, it's not taxable, can go anywhere at all, and they can spend it, and it's laundered, and they can spend it on whatever they want. Then they default on the loan, the SNL collapses, because it's stuck with this worthless piece of land, and I'll give you the payoff on this whole thing when we come back from these words from our sponsors. ¶¶
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. And to finish up what we were talking about in the first segment. So back in the 1980s, the CIA was running a covert war down in Nicaragua. They were funding it because it was illegal. They had to fund it from sources other than the government. So they were bringing cocaine into the United States. The operation was centered at the Mena, Arkansas airport while Bill Clinton was governor. The cocaine was coming in, was being sold across America. Freeway Ricky Ross out in California had a bunch of it. Basically, it was the source of the crack epidemic, was this covert selling of drugs. And nothing new there. The CIA was bringing heroin into the United States during Vietnam. The British fought a war in China for their right to sell opium to the Chinese, which they were buying from here in the United States. It's, drugs and government go hand in hand because it is such a highly profitable venture, and the governments basically want to keep it to themselves. So anyway, cocaine comes into the U.S., it's sold, the money is blended with profits from legitimate businesses, it is deposited into a targeted savings and loan. The same people then go back to that savings and loan with a front company and borrow the money back. It is now laundered and ready to be used for whatever purposes they're doing, whether it's manufacturing guns for the Contras or lining their own pockets. So the front company that borrowed the money back is dissolved, goes out of business. The savings and loan is all of a sudden stuck with a bad loan, and when they go to look at the land that they thought was the collateral for the loan, they find out that it's really worthless. This is what we saw happening in Whitewater and Flowerwood and Castle Grant over and over and over again. This is what led to the savings and loan disaster. So this savings and loans collapse, and along comes the Resolution Trust Corporation with a checkbook full of your taxpayer dollars, and it starts writing checks to all the depositors on record at the collapse savings and loan, which includes our CIA drug runners. They're still on the books for their original depositor. They already got the money back out through the fraudulent loan, but they're still on the books as depositors. So the U.S. government writes them a check full of your tax dollars, and with this very simple device, the CIA drug runners were able to take $1 million in drug profits and turn, and after attorney's fees and taxes and all the rest of it, turn it into $1.8 million with no risk in the space of 6 months' time and all on the backs of the American taxpayer. And it was a huge scam. The corporate media would never, ever touch the story. And, it was a huge scandal. And this is why the Resolution Trust Corporation, every time they were writing up the checks, the records of the savings and loan being bailed out would be locked away. It was just this huge cover-up. Anybody who was investigating this objectively to see what was going on, they wound up taking a long walk off a short balcony of the condo they just bought. So now this brings us back to this duplicate payment to AIG counterparties. We're finding out that the people who are being paid on these credit default swaps, these derivatives, out of AIG to the tune of $170 billion so far, were already paid for these losses last September from the TARP bill. And so they're double dipping out of your pocket. You should be angry. If you're not angry, there's something wrong with you. Have your tap water checked for tranquilizers or something, because there is something just not working if you're not angry. Because the amount of money that they're spending, $11 trillion so far, do you think the American people are ever going to be able to pay that off? Our government is incurring debts that they expect your great-grandchildren to work their lives away, paying off. And I need all of you, if you do nothing else, you need to go to your children and say, look, I did not sign a contract saying that you would spend the rest of your life paying this bill off. And when you grow up and you get married and you have a family, you tell your children the same thing. We never agreed to this. We never signed a contract committing our work to pay off the government's borrowing to save corporations. It's not part of our deal. We pay taxes to get good roads and schools and hospitals and infrastructure and services. We expect full value back for our tax money, not spying on our email, listening to our phone calls, watching us all the time with TV cameras. It's amazing. Now, getting back to this issue of taxes, you know, we're coming into tax month this next month, and a lot of people are getting very angry, and I think especially looking at the way government is spending money recklessly and just borrowing. I mean, the government has borrowed and spent more money in the last 6 months than it spent on every war we ever fought in our nation's 200-plus-year history. I mean, we're talking huge amounts of money. People start thinking trillion. They literally cannot conceive how much money that is. How much money that is. But it's about $40,000 for every living American right now. Every baby being born today in the United States of America, the instant that cord is cut, they are $40,000 in debt plus accruing interest. That's how completely, just from the last 6 months, that's how completely, completely out of control it is. Now, I saw a video earlier today, and I did link it to whatreallyhappened.com, even though I don't actually agree with it. Somebody has found this really old radio interview clip of Barack Obama talking about redistribution of wealth. And they're trying to make a big, and mind you, I have ceased being a fan of Barack Obama. The political honeymoon is over. I think he is as bad for we the people as George Bush was. He's just smoother about it. Now, that being said, they're making a big deal about Obama's talk about redistribution of wealth, and they say, oh, it's bad, he's bringing about communism, and what's going on here is, of course, the GOP is just reeling from the knockout punch they got in the elections last year. They're trying to figure out some way they can scare the American people back into being sheep in the paddock, you know, starting in the end of next year. And so they're waving this around as borderline communism, but, you know, as I was listening to this, I mean, this whole issue of redistribution of wealth, and they're trying to equate it to communism. But the reality is that government exists solely by and implements policy through redistribution of wealth. That's what taxes are. When you get your paycheck every other week and you see all those little withholdings, deductions, they're redistributing your wealth. Who's getting it right now? Merrill Lynch, Goldman Sachs, AIG. That's redistribution of wealth. And as long as the money was flowing from the working and middle classes up to the upper classes had no problem with it. They probably view it as the natural order of things, the way the gods intended the universe should be, with the masses working so that we may build pyramids to our own undying honor. But anytime you talk about maybe changing the direction of the flow of the redistribution of wealth, then it's communism and socialism. Now, I am not a communist, and I think socialism ultimately poisons a society's energy and enthusiasm to move forward, and I think the USSR is a great example of that. But I think it is also true that the system we have right now, in which the ordinary working people are being looted to shower money on people who are so rich they can't remember how many houses they own, that's clearly broken. That's not working. And it is time to address the fact that the system is broken and it doesn't work for we the people. We're going to take another break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Matt is in the control room twiddling the dials and answering the phone. He's feeling lonely. Give him a call. We'll be right back.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. I'm watching our little chat room and checking the email from the listeners, and we're getting some emails saying, call it what it is outright theft, and I presume they're talking about the looting of the American people to pay the double dippers that are taking, and yes, it is theft. In an ideal society, taxation is essentially how we pay for the services government is supposed to give us back. We have an incredibly high taxation rate in the United States, an aggregate taxation rate. Now, other industrialized nations have high taxes, but you get free medical care for it, you get quality roads, you get, you know, hospitals and schools, and you get decent infrastructure. Here in the United States, half of our taxation is absorbed making things that kill people. I mean, just on in terms of the percentage of our gross domestic product that we spend on the machinery of war, America is an aggressive, belligerent, warmongering nation. You cannot claim we are a nation of peace when we are impoverishing our people to constantly prepare and inflict war on the rest of the world. It is simply impossible. The rest of our taxation is basically going to make the interest payments on the debt that has accrued over the last 200 years. Now, as a citizen, I am willing to pay taxes for schools, for our children, for hospitals, for our ill, and to maintain civil order. I want the criminals taken off the streets and thrown in jail. That's a reasonable situation. Build some good roads, keep the rail system running, create an infrastructure environment that allows us to run our businesses, to earn a decent living, to pay our bills. That is the ideal situation. We don't have that here now. What we have is government and corporations working together to extract wealth from the American people under any pretense they can, whether it's bailout or TARP or save the whales or prevent global warming or whatever. The goal of the government at this point is very clearly to extract as much money, as much work product from the American people while giving back the least amount in upkeep possible. It's a very short-sighted, ill-considered policy, but it is where we are right now. And one of our chat room people is saying this is what happened to the Roman Empire. That is exactly right. We go back and we read about the palace that Nero built for himself on Palatine Hill, right where the Vatican is now. I mean, larger than the Vatican City, with indoor artificial lakes. I mean, just completely, over-the-top spending. And while the citizens of Rome itself enjoyed certain benefits of being in the capital city, the rest of the Roman Empire was being ground down into the dirt with endless taxation. And the history books like to tell us that Rome brought the benefits of Roman culture to the rest of the world, medicine, roads, viniculture. They even make jokes about it in Life of Brian. But the reality is that the territories that were conquered by Rome didn't like the arrangement. That's why there were constant revolts. They kept, you know, trying to break free from Roman domination. And in the end, after Rome lost one of its legions in Germany, you began to see these outer provinces breaking away because Rome could no longer militarily enforce its rule. So this idea that Rome brought benefits to the conquered territories that made them all happy is as much a lie as the idea that the Iraqi and Afghani people love the United States while occupying their country. It's complete and utter nonsense. I think in future times, historians will look back at the end of the United States and they will see it as a blend of the fall of the USSR and the fall of Rome. Many of the same things are in place. Certainly, the extreme indebtedness of the government, which is then basically transferred onto the people, because the more the government goes into debt, the more they take money from you. That means you're going deeper into debt just to stay alive and pay for the things you need, medical care especially. Most bankruptcies these days are still the result of a medical problem that exceeds your insurance ability to pay. And then the work of a lifetime is gone into the medical industry and, you know, you're in bankruptcy. And it's completely out of whack. It is a system designed to enrich the few at the sacrifice of the many. It's not the United States that I was taught I was living in. But then so much that we were taught in the schools has turned out to be bull biscuits, and so we shouldn't be surprised that anything we were taught was a load of nonsense. And I think that's the lesson of our time. As we look back on the lies that got us into the war in Iraq, we know to a certainty no other American generation has ever known. We know the U.S. government will lie to us about very important things, will do so shamelessly, without repentance, without regret. And we need to remember that, because whenever the government says something else, we need to say, these are the people who lied to us about Saddam's nuclear bombs. And this is the media that helped sell those lies about the nuclear bombs. And this is the same media that went to court to argue that since there is no law that requires the media to tell the Americans the truth about anything, TV networks can fire reporters who refuse to lie when told to. You need to keep all that stuff in your mind at all times. That is the lesson of this age. And you need to just have it tattooed on the inside of your eyelids. The government and the corporate media lie. You need to remember that, because they're going to continue to lie. They have no reason to stop. The spokespeople and the public relations firms are paid to lie. That's what public relations is. Public relations is a uniquely American invention, and it is lying to the public. That's what public relations is. Look at the first war in Iraq and the story about how the Iraqis were taking babies out of the incubators at the hospital and leaving the babies to die on the cold floor of the nursery while the incubators were shipped back to Iraq. And it was a complete load of nonsense, and it was crafted by Hill and Knowlton, one of the largest public relations firms in the United States. They even have a branch office here in Honolulu. And the U.S. government is one of their biggest clients, and the U.S. government pays them millions and millions and millions of your tax dollars to lie to you, to trick you into agreeing with what the government wants you to do. We always talk about government mind control. It's not science fiction, and it's not drugs, and it's not a ray gun, and it's not chemtrails. All mind control is controlling the brain by controlling what it knows. And that's what public relations and the corporate media do. They give you only that information that will lead your brain to decide of its own free will that which the government wants you to decide. Sun Tzu said that all war is based on deception, and that is true, because when one leader wants to start a war on another country, he has to lie to his own people to trick them into believing there is no other choice. Like when Hitler bombs the twin radio towers at Gleiwitz, Germany, and says, oh, Poland has attacked us, we must strike back now or they will make war on us. And the German people say, yeah, I guess we got to do that. And they marched off to World War II. Just like Israel bombs the twin towers in New York and says, those nasty Arabs did it. We got to go make war on them or they're going to attack us again. And Americans at least initially said, yeah, I guess you're right. We got to go do this. And one of our chat room people was saying they want us to believe. Yeah, yes, they do. That's what public relations does. They are there to sell you. I can't use the word. They're there to sell you what the government wants you to believe. And they make a huge amount of money doing it. The truth can be had for free in this country. Go out to the alternative media. Go out here to Genesis. Go out to What Really Happened. Go out to Alex Jones' websites. The truth can be had for free. But lies pay big bucks in the United States of America. It's a growing industry. Huge amounts of money can be made lying to the American people. If you can convince the American people that the sky is green, you've got a big future with the U.S. government. We're going to take a break here. 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231. And we will be right back.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means...
They still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Some are maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. If you're watching through the studio webcam, the sun is coming up here on the island of Oahu. We've had a little bit of rain come through, but it is looking like it is going to be another gorgeous spring day here. And as soon as the radio show is over, my lady love and I are going to go out and have some weekend kind of fun. It's actually a working weekend because I'm booked up solid on my day job. But we're going to take a little break this morning, go out and have some fun, spend some quality time with my lady love. Anyway, getting back to our stories here, and I'm watching in the chat room, and we've been, during the break, we've been talking about the tendency for all governments, not just the United States, to try and alter the public perception of history to serve their own political interests. And we were going on about the antiquities of Egypt versus the non-existent antiquities for Israel. We were talking about Masada, and we're talking about all kinds of different things here like that. I'm getting an email here talking about the bailout. Hey, Mike, I did not follow the chat room. With those bank failures last year and this, you did not mention that the deposits, this is the insurance on the deposits, was raised from $100,000 to $250,000. The FDIC is almost broke and will need replenishment by the other small banks or the taxpayer. Basically, it comes down to the taxpayer, because if the other small banks are going to have their insurance rates raised, if the, you know, because when you have a bank account and they're making money off of your money, part of that money is paid as insurance premiums to the FDIC to basically cover any losses if the bank goes bust. Well, the FDIC fund is depleted, and so they're talking about either a direct taxpayer money infusion or going to the banks and raising their insurance rates, which the banks will turn around and dump on you, either by lowering the payouts on your savings account or by charging you additional fees. So it doesn't matter the exact mechanism. It's always going to be the same formula. The rich are going to deal with their problems by sucking more money out of you. Maybe coming on the left side, maybe coming on the right, maybe from behind you, maybe above. Doesn't matter. It still comes down to the poor are made to pay for all. If you want to talk about one immutable law of government since the beginning of history, it's that the rich and powerful will solve all their problems by taking more money and more work and enslaving the poor. That's their only solution. We have a government of lawyers and accountants. Everything is a change in the bookkeeping or adding new laws and taking more from the poor to give to the rich. That's the entire system. Haven't seen them do anything else. Have not seen them do anything else for any of these problems. All right, now, we're going to switch over to the situation here in Iran. The last week, President Barack Obama started kind of hemming and hawing regarding the belligerence we've been showing towards Iran. And Barack Obama is trying to play this little game where they're talking about re-engaging in diplomacy and talks as long as Iran is willing to basically back down from some of their belligerent actions. And what this is really doing, folks, is that Barack Obama is smart enough to have figured out that the United States will not be able to win a prolonged war in Iran, especially with Russia supporting the other side. We've had these half-hearted efforts to try and prevent Russia from being in a position to support Iran. The war in Georgia, Ossetia, was almost over before it began. So Russia is able to supply Iran by ground convoy through that particular part of the world. We've been trying to kick up a reason to start a war in Pakistan, which would blockade the only other reasonable land route for Russia to reach into Iran and supply the Middle East. So those aren't working too well. So Barack Obama is realizing that war with Iran will mean war with Russia. That is a war we cannot win because our economy is incredibly fragile and cannot survive another war. We've lost our industrial base. We don't have the industrial infrastructure to sustain the kind of production it takes to support a war logistically. And we're not going to be able to buy our war materials from other countries because they don't want to loan us any more money now just so we can buy TV sets, let alone the very expensive toys it takes to fight a war. So if we get into a major war with Russia, we're probably going to lose. We'll never be defeated because we've got the nuclear arsenal. But you can lose a war even without officially being defeated. And that's a reality of war in the nuclear age. So, pardon me while I cough. So Barack Obama is trying to sort of back away and look like we're the ones offering the peace branch if Iran will sort of apologize for having caused the misunderstanding in the first place, which is utter nonsense. It's the U.S. and Israel, mostly Israel, that has been pushing this very belligerent attitude toward Iran. And Iran, of course, as much as they want peace, you know, they politically within their own country can't apologize to Israel or the United States for something they didn't actually do. Because it is the United States that violated the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty by going in and screaming that Iran's nuclear power station was a bad thing. So Iran is not going to apologize for doing what they are legally entitled to do. Their position is the United States should apologize for acting like this overbearing dictatorship, which is what we are. So there's a little bit of an impasse there. Meanwhile, of course, the neocons, specifically William Kristol, are just exploding with fury that Barack Obama is backing off on Iran. And they're screaming, we haven't brought those people democracy. We haven't brought them freedom yet. We haven't brought them the benefits of the Roman the American Empire. And we must do that. And ultimately what they're revealing, of course, is that it was never about the power station. And it was only marginally about the oil. Israel wants regime change in the countries of the Middle East. They want everybody there who is not a supporter of Israel to be gone. And they want pro-Israel puppets all over the Middle East, or they want those countries smashed up. Of course, they're not going to do it themselves. They want the United States to do it for them. And we are actually seeing here an indication that Barack Obama is going to back off and not give Israel the war they want. Doesn't mean Israel won't try and start it by some of the devious means like 9/11. But at the moment, at least, Barack Obama seems to have had a sudden blast of common sense hit him. We can't win a war in Iran. Not with Russia supporting the other side. It'll turn into another Vietnam. It'll bog us down for 10 years. It will bankrupt this country worse than it already is. And it will destroy America's reputation for moral leadership around the world if we have any left. Now, meanwhile, speaking of war crimes, this last week, a number of soldiers and officers within the Israeli Defense Forces have gone public, admitting what we have been reporting all along, that Israel's actions in Gaza were war crimes. They were being ordered to simply kill anybody they saw. Some of there were rabbis in there with the forces saying it was God's will that they kill the Palestinians. We're finding out now that the Israelis were told that if they saw anybody moving in front of them, to assume it was a terrorist, because anybody who wasn't a terrorist had already left the area. To where? Gaza is the most densely populated piece of ground on the entire earth. Israel had shut all the borders. Where are the people who are non-combatants supposed to escape to? And even the Israeli soldiers were making that same comment. They're talking about shooting grandmothers and little children and being told by their officers, it's okay. In 20 years, those kids will be a terrorist. And it's a big deal in all the foreign press. It's getting a little bit of coverage here in the United States because the newspapers, even those who have not already failed, have begun to realize that once the story is on the Internet, they can't pretend it doesn't exist anymore, because that's a big reason the newspapers have gone away. They weren't covering the stories everybody knew was out there. So it's getting a little bit of coverage. LA Times has covered it. So a shout-out and a kudo to the Los Angeles Times for having the courage to deal with this. But it's all over the place. It confirms everything that we were saying here in the blogosphere and on Genesis back when the campaign was actually taking place. War crimes were being committed, non-combatants were being targeted, and the worst thing is you were made to pay for it all. All right, we're going to take a break here for commercials and some news. We'll be back in about 7 minutes with more news, more phone calls, and just basic Saturday mayhem. So until the end of the news, Aloha America.
Michael Rivero, What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to hour two of our Saturday extravaganza. If you're peeking through our webcam into the studio, the sun is well and truly up here on the island of Oahu, and it looks to be like a beautiful, beautiful spring day. The kind of weather the tourism people want you to think we have here 365 days a year. We don't, which is why we appreciate it all the more when we do. So moving right along, we've got a caller waiting on the line. We're going to go to Pastor William in New Jersey. Aloha, Pastor. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Michael. How are you today?
Doing just fine.
I'm enjoying your show here in South Jersey, and I had a question with regards to something you said about taxes, but first, very quickly, I wanted to share a story with you. Back in 2005, our church, the church at Salem, was seized by counterterrorism agents of the New Jersey State Police, in conjunction with the Salem County Sheriff's Office, and the church was seized for refusing to incorporate with the state under the government as a 501c3, and that in itself is a pretty unbelievable story, and it's actually thoroughly documented in the court records and also in a 3-hour documentary DVD that my wife and I personally produced to tell the story, and also on our website, which is www.thechurchatsalem.info. And so, if you
okay, let's get that one again. That's www.thechurchatsalem,
and that is spelled out. The second at is spelled out at.
Mm-hmm.
.info.
Okay.
And the whole story is there. And by the way, we offer our documentary DVD free of charge. It can be viewed there on the website. But for those that would prefer to have their own copy, we're giving those copies away absolutely free. We've got nothing to sell. We just want to tell our story.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, what I'm calling about, you mentioned earlier about the you not having any problem with your taxes going to those things which are deemed to be the legitimate functions of government, such as fixing the roads and keeping criminals off the street, and you know that is absolutely reasonable and acceptable, and you know those who are citizens and members of the body politic have that responsibility, and you know you can't argue with that. But my question would be, In light of the way that the government has so obviously and blatantly abused their responsibility to collect those taxes and use them only for those legitimate functions, in light of the fact that they have so disgracefully used or misused that power, what do you think would be a reasonable response by those who are just plain sick of seeing their tax dollars stuffed down a hole and basically going nowhere?
Well, I think we've already been through this once in our history. You know, some 200-odd years ago, we had a government that was taking money, not providing any services, basically ignoring what we wanted, and spending the money on foreign wars and personal enrichment.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically tarred and feathered the tax collectors, and then we kicked the government out. And I think, you know, and I'm not advocating violence, and I don't like violence. It's bad for tourism, and we've got enough problems with our tourism as it is.
Yeah.
But, we're obviously heading towards a violent confrontation between the government and the people. The government knows this. They're making all the preparations for it.
It certainly appears that way, yeah.
And but the bottom line is, yeah, our government is in the hands of people who think the natural order of things is that we, the people, should give all of our money that we don't need to actually live on, should go to them for the building of monuments to their own glory. And that's not an appropriate use of government. That's not the way this country was definitely set up. And it's interesting you would bring this up, because we got a listener email that just came in. People will pull a gun on someone trying to steal their wallet, yet The genitals stuck up their derriere means nothing. Crazy. Municipal taxes cover most of the items you talk about. Gas taxes are supposed to pay for the roads and highways. Federal income tax seems to be outright theft for personal enrichment of, you know, and I'm adding to the original email here. Federal income tax is outright theft for the enrichment of a private banking cartel called the Federal Reserve and to feed the military-industrial complex, which is the ultimate in the bottomless hole of where our money is going. And I think the American people need to remember, taxes are, I'm going to challenge you here on something. Taxes are not an obligation or responsibility of the citizens. We are consumers and customers, and we are buying services from the government. And we have a consumer's right to expect that what we pay for, we will get. And if we don't, We should have the option to not do business with that government anymore, to, in effect, fire our employees and say, we need to get somebody in here who's going to do a better job. And I'm not talking about elections, because all elections do is put new minor players into a system and structure which, by its design, is designed to loot the American people for the enrichment of a very few.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And in fact, the premise of the relationship between the people and the government is based on what is commonly in law referred to as the social contract, which recognizes the fact that it is a two-way agreement. It's not unilateral. Even though in terms of an accurate terminology, it is an adhesion contract, which is one by law that gives the government the superior advantages over the citizens, and it should not be that way. But the fact is, the social contract between the people and the government, and between the people among themselves, is that everyone will agree to certain responsibilities in the society so that there can be a degree of order maintained in that society, and that the government will, in turn, fulfill certain responsibilities, such as protecting the people and providing basic services. And that whole concept is just completely broken down. And, I saw this coming. I've seen this coming for many years. And, I've been conscious of these things and also how, unfortunately, the church in America has been basically hoodwinked by the government into believing that the state is appointed by God as some type of a functionary or
the return of divine right
or caretaker. Yeah, and that is just not. And they've used Romans chapter 13 in defense of that, and it absolutely does not say that. In fact, we lay that bare misconception and that lie. We bear that out on our website in one of our. One of our essays there regarding rendering unto Caesar that which belongs to Caesar, but it's especially unfortunate that the church has been deceived by and large. Now, I'm talking about your denominational and your organized, or not your organized, but your institutionalized churches. Have bought this whole thing hook, line, and sinker. And
well, it's more than just bought it. It was an intentional targeting going back to the Bush administration. The faith-based initiatives was a funding mechanism to go out to these organizations and say, we're going to add some money to your budgets here, and in exchange you will agree to X, Y, and Z. We know that the Federal Emergency Management Agency has been intentionally contacting and co-opting religious leaders to basically propagandize the flock, as you said, the return of divine right of rulership here. As far as the render unto Caesar's comment, you know, what is the name of the chapter that that appears in again?
Well, it's actually Romans.
Exactly.
Chapter.
Exactly. Well, you know, who ran the Romans? We know that
yeah.
we know the Bible has been subject yeah. to editing after the fact. And I have to tell you this idea of rendering unto Caesar.
Yeah.
I think that maybe came along a little later in the process. That's just my opinion, because it doesn't sound consistent with what we know of the historical character of Jesus. Anyway, Pastor, can you stay with us until this next commercial break?
Sure, I'll be glad to. Thanks.
All right, hang on there. We're going to take a break here and come back with Pastor William talking about the church, talking about literally the recreation of divine right of rulership in the United States of America. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're talking with Pastor William of the Church at Salem in New Jersey on the phone. We're talking about how the U.S. government has intentionally approached and co-opted religious leaders around the country to basically propagandize their followings, that the government is somehow religiously defined, they're bringing back the principle of divine right of rulership and attempting to sell this idea through the churches that what the United States is doing in other countries is somehow righteous and good. We heard this story, of course, last week from the situation in Gaza, that the rabbis that were with the troops in Gaza were telling them that, that God wanted them to be killing the Gazans and the Palestinians. And we know that FEMA has intentionally approached many religious leaders in the United States to tell their congregations to prepare to accept a tyrannical government dictatorship as somehow necessary. And we certainly know that Israel's public relations people have successfully exploited a lot of the end times theology to convince people that if we help Israel set fire to the Middle East, that we're somehow bringing about these biblical prophecies, which, if I understand correctly, this whole end time thing isn't actually in the Bible. It's sort of been brought on after the fact. So, Pastor, just basically in summation, the taxation situation is completely out of control here.
Yeah, actually, while we were on break here, I went to our website, and I had forgotten, which I've got several essays on the site, and it's mm-hmm. actually the essay on Podium 3, and it's titled Christ Tells the Hypocrites to mm-hmm. Render Therefore Unto Caesar. And it presents that whole concept of rendering unto Caesar in a way that most people have never considered it before, simply because the church has, the institutionalized church or the corporate church has taught them to interpret it, or actually interpreted it for them. Mm-hmm. Basically said, this is what you believe about rendering unto Caesar. But if you go back and you just read the words that are written, they speak for themselves. And the essay that we have up there on Podium 3, it makes the whole issue of rendering unto Caesar as crystal clear as it can be.
Okay, well, I just linked from whatreallyhappened.com to the church at salem.org, .info or org?
That's correct, .info, yeah.
.info. Okay, I think I may have, I've just linked it, and I saw the page, and it's up there, and hopefully we're going to drive some traffic your way, and hopefully people will read that, because I do hear from a lot of listeners all the time about this render unto Caesar as
yeah.
meaning that anybody who's a true Christian should be obeying the government at all times, whereas, as we understand the historical Jesus himself, he was a bit of a revolutionary, not only against their equivalent of the corporate church, but against the Roman occupiers.
Yeah.
And he lived in an occupied country. He lived in basically the same part of the world that, you know, that Israel is occupying now. And so we need to realize the equivalent stresses were in place on that society at the same time.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
All right. Well, thank you, Pastor, for the phone call, and hopefully we'll get some people visiting your website from my website. And we're going to let you go now. We're going to switch over to Matt in Texas. Aloha, Matt. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Howdy, Mike. I just wanted to, I thought you brought up a really good point at the end of your first show about, you know, the old ladies and the children in Palestine being labeled as terrorists and jumping over to this Missouri Information Analysis Center report that came out that now labels me a terrorist because I live in Texas and I support Ron Paul. I just wanted to get your thoughts about that. I think the term is getting thrown around left and right, but it doesn't mean anything anymore. And I believe more it is now a term, or sorry, used to stifle dissent. It's now a term thrown at somebody because, you know, my ideas are not what the ruling establishment thinks I should believe. You know, and it's tied to this this very graphic image of like a suicide bomber, and is now applied to anybody that doesn't, you know, doesn't go with the flow. Doesn't believe what the elite believe.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Let me just step in here for a minute. The whole point of using the label terrorist is because it is so linked with 9/11 and suicide bombers and these acts of atrocity. Is the intention is when you label somebody a terrorist, you stigmatize them to the point where nobody is going to listen to what they have to say at all. Even though what they're saying may actually make sense. It's just a device to trick people into pulling down the blinders and saying, oh, no, I can't be seen with that person. I can't talk to that person. They're a terrorist. I don't want to associate with them and run away. It's the same psychology behind smearing somebody as an anti-Semite or as a communist. The idea is to instantly sever any possibility of real meaningful conversation with this person and their ideas. And you're right. It's being overused. And just look over the last 10 years, Israel has so overused anti-Semite as a smear, it's lost its effectiveness. They've burned it out. Nobody cares. Now the same thing with terrorists. You know, we used to say, big bag terrorist. They're using it so much, it's becoming a joke. People are putting on their T-shirts. We're putting out a T-shirt that says, I'm not a terrorist. On my best days, I'm an irritation. And that's the whole idea. It has become something of ridicule. And, you know, they've used it out by using it too much. They'll probably have to come up with another name or something to try and do the same mechanism. But the goal is, by labeling somebody with whatever the label is going to be this week, is to trick other people into simply not wanting to listen to them at all. And exactly. What that expresses is a fear that you and I and the other hosts here on GCN have something to say that America needs to hear.
It's character assassination, man. I mean, they totally...
Absolutely.
You know, forget the message. They're just, you know, yeah, you're a terrorist, here's your label. There you go. And I was thinking about it. It's almost akin to like the Salem witch trials. I mean,
yes.
You know, you pay somebody to find a witch, they're going to find witches because they want the money. You know, the same thing now. If you pay people to find terrorists, there's terrorists everywhere.
That's exactly what's going on. We saw the same thing, you know, a few years back when the big money and political button was ritual satanic child abuse, and the FBI spent millions of dollars researching it and studying it and creating all these people whose job was looking. And when it came right down to the end, they never actually found a real serious, you know, a single incident of satanic ritual child abuse. There were a lot of rumors, a lot of urban legends, but it was just puffed up as this huge... Remember in the 1990s, the rape epidemic, the rape crisis.
Oh, God.
Millions and millions of dollars in TV time and everything that was done fanning this horrible abuse of women and rape crisis. And when they finally got down with the numbers, there was no rape crisis. There was a crisis of false accusation of rape that was being fanned by the media. But the actual incidents of attacks on women... There was no upward surge. There was no epidemic. And the end result is that real victims were being ignored more because police departments were afraid of being sued by men whose constitutional rights had been violated. And it's all about creating monsters to scare the people into agreeing with a given agenda. Now it's terrorism. You're scared of terrorists. Therefore, you will agree with what we're doing to the country. It's not working. They've burned it out. We got to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors. Call us, 800-259-9231.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And the lines are open if you want to dial in and join us for the last half hour of our show today. Meanwhile, I want to get on to an issue. A lot of people in the chat room have been talking about this. George Galloway, the Minister of Parliament, who so roundly backed the United States Congress into a corner over the lies leading to the war in Iraq, has been banned from entering Canada. And it strikes me as an extraordinary double standard, because Canada had no problem allowing George Bush to come in and do speaking engagements at a huge amount of money. But George Galloway, when he wants to come in for basically the same purpose, he's blocked at the border, ostensibly because he is a security threat, which strikes me as very absurd. Anybody watching George Galloway knows he's articulate and intelligent and very knowledgeable, but he's not a violent man by any stretch of the imagination. He does have some opinions that many people might object to. And after a little bit of digging and the hemming and hawing by the Canadian authorities about how, well, he was viewed as a security threat, and maybe we don't agree with his comments about Afghanistan, it comes out that the reason George Galloway was banned from Canada was pressure from Jewish groups, who, of course, don't want you to hear from anybody who might disagree with Israel's agenda or who might be critical of Israel's actions in Gaza, which George Galloway certainly is, and so am I, and so is any reasonably sane human being. But we're finding out that this group in Canada that agitated for Galloway to be banned from Canada as a terrorist is itself a terrorist group. The Jewish Defense League was identified by the Federal Bureau of Investigation as a terrorist group in 2001. Now, remember, this is the group whose leader at the time, Irv Rubin, was arrested for planning to blow up a mosque and to kill a U.S. congressman. And he was arrested and thrown in jail and then conveniently suicided before he could go to trial and blow the whistle on just who his backers were. And this same group are the ones who are up there saying, well, you know, George Galloway is a terrorist, and he says, you know, Hamas and Hezbollah have serious legitimate grievances, which they do. We have Israeli soldiers on videotape admitting that Israel committed war crimes in Gaza. And what we're seeing by these Jewish groups in other countries trying to control who is and is not allowed to speak is Israel's very pathetic attempt to reshape history after the fact. Israel seems to survive by warping and distorting the history of what is going on. And it appears they have been doing it all along. We know that the two artifacts they had, which claimed which proved the existence of the first temple, both turned out to be frauds. We know that the bodies buried up at Masada, which are supposed to be the remains of the Jewish martyrs, their graves are intermingled with the graves of some slaughtered pigs, which is something no Jewish funeral would actually ever do. So the bodies at Masada appear to be those of the Roman soldiers from the garrison, who would have had no issue with being interred with the remains of pigs, because they might need a snack in the afterlife. So we know that all politicians try and distort history to serve their own interests. We have, back in 1994, the National Archives declassified some documents, which pretty much proved Franklin Roosevelt not only knew the Japanese were coming to attack Pearl Harbor, out my left window here, but that he goaded the Japanese into doing it. It's like George Orwell said in 1984, those who control the past control the future, those who control the future control the present. So all governments are trying to distort history, and we're seeing Israel try and do it now by using their influence in every country, now Canada, to make sure that you only hear their one point of view. And if you're only allowed to hear their one point of view, chances are you're going to agree with it. And I think, as was the case with Freeman here in the United States, this banning of George Galloway in Canada may have been that one step too far, because everybody is realizing that Galloway was banned from Canada because Israel is controlling the Canadian government to the same extent it controls the United States government. And that is a very, very dangerous thing. It's one thing if you've subverted a government and you're doing it covertly, and the general population still thinks the government is working in their best interests. But when you act in such a heavy-handed fashion that it becomes obvious what's going on, when it becomes obvious that the government of Canada is obeying the wishes of Israel, even to the detriment of the Canadian people, then the Canadians are going to get angry about it. And you don't want to mess with the Canadians. They're tough people. They're the guys who actually burned the White House. The reason it's white today, the Canadians came down during, they sided with Canada, and they were a big ugly thing. But, I mean, they're tough people. You don't want to mess with them. You really don't. So that's what's going on with George Galloway. There was a wonderful video where there was an interview with a Mr. Weinstein who represented one of these Jewish groups and George Galloway. And it was obvious that Weinstein was thrashing and flailing and just trying to just smear Galloway to such a point where no serious human being would ever consider allowing him into their country. And yet you could tell on Weinstein's face he knows he's losing the war for legitimacy, because ultimately, civilized nations do believe in the right of freedom of speech and freedom of opinion and freedom for alternative points of view. And when you sit up there and say, no, you may not listen to this person because he doesn't agree with me, that's dictatorship right there. If you believe in freedom of speech, that means supporting the right of this guy over here to say whatever he wants to say, even if you don't agree with it. It's easy to agree freedom of speech if the person agrees with you. The real test of how committed you are to the principles of freedom of speech is when you support the right of somebody to speak out on something that you don't agree with. That's your real test of citizenship. And Canada has just failed. I'm hearing in the chat room, yes, it was the War of 1812 when the Canadians came down and burned the White House, and that's why it's white today. Before that, I think it was kind of a pale blue with white trim, but they just whitewashed the whole thing to cover up the burn marks. And I know they've got some of those old burn timbers that had to be replaced there in a warehouse someplace, because I know when George Bush Sr. came in, they gave him a little desk set with a piece of that wood in it, which I imagine is a tremendous prize for somebody in government to have. Anyway, so moving right along, the website of Pastor Williams, the Church at Salem, is now up on whatreallyhappened.com if you want to go in and take a look at it. And he does have this wonderful essay that the quote from Romans, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar," has been taken out of context, and that it is not really an exhortation that Christians must always obey the government, especially when the government is itself breaking all the Ten Commandments. I mean, let's look at Iraq. Let's look at Iraq. Bush lied to us about Saddam's nuclear bombs. That's the bearing false witness one. He did so because he coveted Iraq's oil wealth, among other reasons. That breaks another commandment. He murdered a lot of people. That's a real biggie right there. He claimed God told him to do it. That's taking the Lord's name in vain, which is on one of those different variations of the Ten Commandments. So, I mean, this whole war in Iraq is like breaking all these commandments Christians are supposed to hold dear. And yet the U.S. government, by virtue of the faith-based initiative, is going out to try and get co-opted corporate clergy to say, yeah, it's cool what the U.S. is doing. God wants us to do that, even though it's a violation of the Ten Commandments, which is the same hypocrisy we've seen anytime any clergy of any faith stands before the armies of any nation and says, God wills it, or the gods will it, or heaven wills it. In the movie Cold Mountain, there's this wonderful quote by the hero of the film, who is trying to portray himself as a very, very simple man of very, very few words. And he's taking a stroll with his girlfriend, who's the daughter of the local preacher. And the preacher's saying, I will not argue for war in my church. And the character of Inman says, you know, I imagine God must be tired of being called down on the both sides of every argument. It's exactly what's going on here. It's a wonderful movie. If you haven't seen it, please go rent it. It is a wonderful commentary on war. We're going to be back after these words from our sponsors, 800-259-9231.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We've got a caller waiting on the line. Before we get to him, though, a couple of things real quick. Got an email from a listener saying, yes, Canadian and British forces set fire to the White House in the War of 1812, but that was after the U.S. burned down Parliament House in Ottawa. What can I say? War is heck, and I wish we weren't going around burning down other people's property. But it was rather interesting, getting back to George Orwell's 1984, the book within the book, The Theory and Practice of Oligarchical Collectivism, says that the purpose of war is to destroy work product, to keep the population working and in servitude to the ruling classes. And if you realize, without all of this war and destruction, we really could build a better war, but build a better world. But if we built that better world, we would want to be free of the rulers over us. And so the rulers must continually create wars to destroy the better world we're trying to build for ourselves. It's sick, it's psychotic, but that's what's going on right now. Now, real quick, one more story before we go to the phones. Madagascar is turning out to be a classic example of U.S. imperialism in other countries. The government over in Madagascar was friendly to the United States. They were exploiting their people for the benefit of American corporations, just like Batista used to do in Cuba and the Shah of Iran did in Iran, and Ferdinand Marcos did, you know, just keeping their people down, keeping them poor, so the proceeds from their work and labor could go to benefit American corporations. So the government of Madagascar ordered a crackdown on protests by the unarmed population of Madagascar. The army refused to fire on the unarmed citizens and instead joined the population in forcing the president, backed by the U.S., to resign. And when he refused to resign, they kicked him out, and they put in the opposition leader. Now, the United States, of course, is screaming, it's a coup, it's a coup, that's a bad thing, we can't have that. Hey, how do you think the United States came into existence? We kicked out the last government because they were not taking care of the people. And so now the United States has ceased all financial aid that they were paying to the former government. Probably the guy was just putting it in his pocket anyway. But you know something? Until we started dicking around with Madagascar, it was a peaceful place. People got along just fine. This gets back to this issue. The U.S. perpetuates itself and survives and loots the rest of the world by causing trouble wherever it goes and flipping the people back and forth and getting them to war among themselves and just picking up the leftover pieces and putting in their own pocket. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Clarence in Oklahoma. Aloha, Clarence. Welcome back to the show. What's on your mind today?
Well, I thought I'd just go along with your previous thing on the Israel lobby. I don't know if you caught it, and I wish I had recorded it, but White House news conference within the last 2 weeks, I just happened to just catch this channel surfing. Helen Thomas, the dean of the White, used to be dean of the White House press corps, I guess.
Have they put her in the back row yet?
Yeah, not quite yet, but who's this going to, Gibbs, this new guy? Anyway, he takes the question first. She asked him, this just said volumes, just this one exchange about the control that the Zionist lobby has here in this country. She asked him, does any nation in the Middle East have nuclear weapons?
She asked that of Obama. That was during Obama's first press conference.
Well, I think she asked Gibbs again. I didn't see that one, but she asked Gibbs, and he, you talk about, he should have been on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah. He's bobbing and weaving all over the place.
Talk about, ducking and bobbing and dancing, and never got a straight answer from him. When it's open knowledge that Israel has anywhere from 200 to 400 nuclear warheads.
Well, we've now got an official U.S. government report from the military. The Joint Services Report from the last year lists Israel as a nuclear power. But the reason the White House, whether it's Obama or Gibbs, will not make a comment one way or the other. They can't say that Israel has no nuclear weapons because everybody's going to know that they're lying. But they can't say that Israel does have nuclear weapons because the instant they do, the Symington Amendment to the Foreign Appropriations Bill of 1961 kicks in. That Foreign Appropriations Bill is the legislation by which our money is looted and given to Israel year after year after year after year. And the Symington Amendment basically said that the U.S. cannot give foreign aid to any country that is not a signer of the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty, but is known to have nuclear weapons. And so the instant Obama or Gibbs says, yes, Israel has nuclear weapons, then all foreign aid to Israel becomes illegal.
Interesting. And I did not know that. Mm-hmm. That is amazing. So that explains a lot. That explains everything right there.
That is, you know, they're keeping the money flowing to Israel. They don't want to go back and change the Symington Amendment to say, except for Israel. We let Israel have, unwatched, uninspected nuclear weapons, and we're still going to give them tons and tons of money. And, everyone talks about this special relationship between Israel and the United States. Boy, I'd sure like to know what it is that makes it special. Because, it looks like the Canadians are just now realizing that they've got the same deal going on up there. And we need to find out.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, there is something very wrong with this so-called special relationship, especially since 9/11. And I think that's a big part of it right now. Ever since 9/11, whatever Israel wants, the U.S. will give them. I mean, Barack Obama is president of an economy that is in the worst meltdown since the Great Crash of 29, may even exceed it. And he's out there saying, we will make sure that Israel is not affected by the economic downturn, meaning at a time when Americans are sleeping in alleys and eating out of trash bins, he's going to take more of our tax money to give to Israel. That sucks. A nation with people sleeping in the streets should not be giving tax money to any foreign countries at all, whether it's Israel or Madagascar or Venezuela or whoever. We shouldn't be doing it. The government is supposed to be taking care of this country and these people, not ones on the other side of the world. And I don't care how special the special relationship is. Now, whether they've got photographs of Obama in compromising conditions or they've got one of their nuclear weapons planted somewhere in Washington, D.C., I don't know what it is, but we've got to find out by what means Israel has totally subverted the United States government. Because it's obvious they have. We know that part of the mechanism was Bernie Madoff in his $65 billion pyramid scheme, because a lot of the profit from that scheme went into these Jewish and Israeli charities, which in turn were giving money through AIPAC to our Congress critters. So, we're finding out now, Israel didn't even use their own money to buy our government out from under us. They used our money that was swindled from us through Bernie Madoff and these other pyramid schemes that we're finding out about now. They cheat American investors out of the money, then use the money to buy the Congress for the purposes of Israel. This is probably the reason the Securities and Exchange Commission refused to investigate Madoff all these years, even when Harry Markopoulos took them the evidence of wrongdoing on a silver platter with a big glittery bow on it.
This is the equivalent of a chihuahua ordering a pit bull around. This is exactly what's happening.
Well, I don't know. I think it's more
we're the pit bull. We used to be, but we're kind of shrinking right now. Maybe,
more like a German Shepherd. More like a German Shepherd.
Something on that order,
When I was younger, we actually had a little tiny toy poodle, and we had a German Shepherd, and that toy poodle would boss that German Shepherd around.
It was the most amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
Well, I'll let you get to it. It's almost near the end of the show, so I'll let you go.
Yes, it is. All right. Thanks a lot, Clarence. Always a joy to have you on the show, and please call in again. So, anyway, there is something really strange going on here right now. And like I said, the Canadians are just now beginning to realize that it's happened to their country as well. I know a lot of the smarter, more aware, sharper Canadians realized something was up back during that whole situation with Ernst Zundel when they found out that the Canadian authorities knew his home was going to be sent a mail bomb and told the Postal Service to let it go through. I mean, you know, that was very covert. But now with the situation with George Galloway, it's provoked a public outcry equivalent to what happened when Freeman was ousted down here in the United States. Something is going on. By some mechanism, Israel is controlling our countries for their benefit. And if we don't find out about it and get it shut down now, we're already slaves. We're slaves to a foreign nation. We're occupied territory, and that's got to stop. That's it for Saturday. We'll be back Monday night at our usual time, 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Genesis Communication Network. So until then, stay safe, be well, have a good weekend. I hope the weather is as beautiful there as it is here, and aloha, America.